You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The number of people incarcerated in jails across California has been on the decline in recent years. But an investigation found that in roughly that same time frame, the number of people dying in custody is on the rise. That investigation comes from CalMatters, a nonprofit newsroom that partners with public media stations across the state. They found that despite Governor Newsom pledging to curb jail deaths nearly 5 years ago, more people have died every year since. And some jails hit a record. There are 57 jails across California, so the reasons behind why can be difficult to pin down. But there are themes as well as some hopeful solutions along the way. Nigel Dwara is a justice reporter for CalMatters and joins us with more behind his investigation. Good afternoon, Nigel.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So, Nigel, when and why did you start looking into jail deaths around California?
Sure. So we started to hear about the deaths in Riverside County and San Diego. And there was some literature from the state that came out, some investigations from the state saying, you know, certain jails could do better. Certain jails needed to improve. Then we got the numbers last year that told us the numbers for 2022. And that started setting records. So at that point, we kind of got going and trying to see what was going on.
And you specifically looked into jails. Can you explain the difference behind a jail and a prison in California?
Sure. So a jail is a county facility that's run by a sheriff. It's where people are held generally before they're convicted of anything. Versus a prison, of course, is generally after folks are convicted and it's run by the state.
You know, when you the uptick that you documented through your investigation, I mean, it also came at a time when you also documented that the population within California's jails is at a lower level. So why did California's jail population drop in the first place?
Oh, well, as you mentioned at the start, you know, there's a lot of different reasons, and there are certainly different reasons for different jails. But a couple of things kind of popped up for us. One is, of course, fentanyl. Replacing methamphetamine as the dominant drug in jails, we have heard and talked to folks said that, you know, you're just getting more overdose deaths than you used to. The other thing is suicide, self-harm. A lot of people, specifically in some of the smaller jails or jails we looked at, will harm themselves and, you know, occasionally get through with the suicide. So those were two big ones. The biggest cause, of course, is natural causes, which is kind of a catch-all, but that can vary from somebody, you know, getting sick inside and they were already on the street and they get inside, or it can be something that is defined by natural causes and we don't really find out what happened until a year or two later.
I mean, but there are fewer people in jail now than there were a decade ago, and you found that there were some records that were set when it came to deaths within California jails. So why did California's population within jails, why did it start to decline in recent years?
Sure. Jail population has been declining, at least in part because of Prop 47 and 57. So there's fewer people going into jails. And so that cut down on the number. And there's also been certain local ordinances in different places that are meant to limit how many people are going into jails. What we tried to look at especially was the rate per thousand people. And that, as you mentioned, in some jails, the raw numbers themselves were starting to set records. When we compared some of these jails to, let's say, the death rate at Rikers Island, we found certain jails in California were actually worse.
What kind of oversight is there? Is there a board or some entity that is supposed to oversee and maybe have some accountability with how jails are run and how they operate?
There definitely is, and that was a big focus of our investigation. It's called the Board of State and Community Corrections. It's about 13 people. Most of them are law enforcement related. There's a couple folks that are appointed by the governor to be a public advocate. And their job is to look at two sides of the jail. They need to see if the jail is following the protocol in terms of keeping people, you know, they get an hour, you know, the rec time they get or how frequently they're checked on. And then, of course, the second is the facilities to make sure the facilities are up to code. That process and their process has certainly been criticized, including by the Legislative Analyst Office that looked at what they do and how they do it and found that in at least when they looked a couple years ago, the board really didn't have a clear mission and it was kind of unclear what they were doing besides these scheduled inspections.
I would imagine if you don't have a clear mission, that also would lead to there being limitations of what a board could do if something bad or something wrong was happening within a jail.
Sure. And I think that was part of the motivation to some legislation we saw last year, the past last year, it'll take effect this year, that seeks to kind of put more oomph behind the board. One change they're going to make, they're going to add a staff person called a detention monitor. That person is supposed to, from this position in the state, be able to oversee all the detention facilities, especially the jails, and, you know, judge how good of a job they are doing, and I guess potentially take corrective measures if it's not really good.
Were you able to talk to any of the board members?
We were. We spoke to a couple. One, of course, is law enforcement, Sheriff Shannon Dykus in San Bernardino County. Another one was a board member who's the public rep, Norma Kumpian. And from Norma, what we heard was she's very frustrated. She feels like the board needs to do more, that when they make recommendations, the sheriffs can just look at them and decide, hey, we don't need to worry about it and move on.
You also mentioned in your reporting that Governor Newsom knew this was a problem, you know, 5 years ago, pledged to prevent or at least curb jail deaths that were taking place. And this is prior to the pandemic. So what actions has the state taken since then?
Well, they've certainly had some reports. Again, there's legislation coming that's putting in a detention monitor, but even that's an interesting case study, right? Because the original legislation, as it was proposed, would have put a detention monitor into every county. By the time lobbying process was over and it actually got to the floor and started passing, it's one detention monitor for the whole state. So we can judge the efficacy and kind of see what happens this summer and, of course, as they sort of take in. But keeping in mind that this is a far, far, far smaller project than it would have been under the original legislation.
So one person for 57 jails in the state.
That's correct.
So as it currently stands now, because that position hasn't taken effect, how is a jail death investigated?
Right now, you know, going back to the San Bernardino County Sheriff, they say that they treat every jail death like a homicide investigation. There's a thick binder that they go through and that it thoroughly investigated. We actually haven't seen the results of a jail death investigation because public record law in California can make that kind of tough to access. But part of the next in our series of stories is going to look at that process and how it goes.
You mentioned that when it comes to jails versus state prisons, I mean, they are managed by sheriff's department. So when you talk to sheriffs who are overseeing these jails, what did you learn from them?
The sheriffs that oversee the jails, by and large, told me that the deaths that they're experiencing are deaths that would have happened anyway, that somebody might have just died on the street, but instead they're dying in the jail. Somebody might have overdosed on the street, but instead it's in the jail. So to them, the ones I talked to, this is just an issue of society, and they are just sort of, this is a symptom of it.
You know, you mentioned one of the types of deaths that are taking place is due to the opioid epidemic, specifically fentanyl. But they're inside a facility. How are these drugs getting into jails?
Well, that's a very interesting question. We have heard a lot about how drugs get in. Certainly there's, on the side of the sheriffs, they believe that people who, for instance, know that they're going to go back to jail on a probation violation will secrete it inside their bodies, wait to go through, the jails can't catch it, and then they get it out of their bodies, and then there's overdoses on the floor. We've heard about drones bringing stuff in over the walls, or them dipping letters in liquid, fentanyl, whatever, and then sending those letters, and then drying the letters out, and that gets the drugs in jails. But another question is, okay, if a lot of jails were closed during the pandemic, then how were the drugs getting in? If you look at San Diego, there is a big protest movement centered around trying to get the deputies scanned, the deputies and the staff that walk into the facilities, because these folks are saying, look, the drugs are getting in, and they got in when there was no visitors. So clearly, there has to be some interaction between the deputies or the staff and the drugs getting into the jails.
So currently, as it stands now, if a deputy walks into the jail, there's no scanning or checks that take place.
It depends from jail to jail. That's certainly true in San Diego.
Well, in San Diego, you met a woman named Sabrina Weddle. Tell us about her and her story.
Sabrina Weddle had a brother named Saxon Rodriguez. He died in jail. And she started going to the meetings of the Oversight Board in San Diego. And she has sort of made it a big mission in her life to protest, to be outside of the jail, and to sort of, she says, to make a fuss. She wants those deputies scanned. She wants the nurses that are going into the facility to get scanned. She stands outside the facility and yells at them as they're walking in and holds up signs and says, scan these deputies.
How did her brother pass away?
Her brother died of a fentanyl overdose.
You sent us some sound of when you actually were talking to Sabrina when she was out there protesting. So let's take a listen and we'll unpack it on the back end.
If I could come out here every day, I would. The parking's a little rough, but this is my brother's memorial site. I can't get to the fourth floor, but, you know, you see flowers on the side of the freeways and stuff where people have, you know, accidents and they passed away. I can't do that here.
Is this the jail your brother died in?
Yes. Yes, he died on the fourth floor on July 20th. 2021, 4 days after being booked by Chula Vista PD. Yes, so it was a fentanyl overdose, but medical examiner stated that if he would have been checked 5 minutes prior to him dying, then he could have been revived. They're supposed to check the inmates every 60 minutes. They checked my brother at 65.
Given that he died from a fentanyl overdose, I mean, what did you learn about? I mean, are there limitations in how deputies can respond if someone is overdosing? There should be naloxone, right?
Yeah, that has been one of the main arguments from folks who were arguing, you know, that overdose deaths can be combated, is if naloxone was available everywhere in jails, everyone could get it easily. Even inmates could apply it to someone else who they see experiencing an overdose death.
I would also imagine, I mean, this is also happening during a period of the pandemic, and we know that burnout was real for a lot of emergency responders, frontline workers. How did the pandemic and burnout impact the people who are staffed and employed within jails across the state?
Well, it's exactly like you said, they were experiencing, you know, a lot of burnout. I think in part from the folks that we talked to, for instance, a doctor who worked at the jails in Los Angeles, she didn't feel like she was, first of all, really giving appropriate care to folks who were mostly locked in their cell for most of the day or were limited in the kind of the drugs they could get. And then beyond that, you know, she just felt like the mission itself was not working out. So she and a lot of medical care workers in jails left. And so the impact of that is what you can imagine. Institutional memories walking out the door, experiences walking out the door. It's not really that easy in the first place to get doctors to come and work in a jail or jail system. And so, at least in her view, the replacements, of course, had less experience, which led to less great care for those inmates.
Yeah, and I would imagine a facility, a jail, obviously has walls, but it is not, it doesn't exist in a vacuum. There are other issues at play within society, from a mental health crisis, an opioid epidemic. You know, how did you learn about how what's happening, you know, in public is actually impacting people who are incarcerated inside a jail?
Well, certainly the sheriff's point of view, I think, would be that, yes, that this is a societal problem and we're just kind of experiencing that. And what's happening to us here in the jails is happening across the board. So why blame us for what's happening? I think the counter argument, though, is that if a hospital lost this many people or, to natural cause deaths, or if a suicide prevention ward lost this many people to suicide, they would have a problem, right? That the places where someone might get 5150, they would have a problem. They might get shut down. That doesn't happen in a jail. So it sort of depends who you're listening to and where you think the fix could come from.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with CalMatters justice reporter Nigel Dwara about an investigation looking at an increase in deaths within California's jails. So Governor Newsom knew that or was aware that there was a problem early on in his governorship, announced changes, and the number of deaths continued to increase, although jail populations continue to decline. What has the governor's office said about your investigation?
About the investigation itself, nothing yet. We did manage to track him down in the Inland Empire before the story ran to try and ask him, you know, pretty simply, exactly as you said, that the numbers are down, but the deaths are up. Is this a failure of your administration? And his response was basically that we're doing a lot. We're doing a lot and more is coming. Detention monitors on the way. So let's see what happens next. That I'm sure makes sense. But for the folks who were there now inside the jails or until this detention monitor starts, it may not be enough.
You mentioned that some sheriffs have resisted outside pressure to change their practices, but are there some sheriff's departments, some jails that are changing their practices to cut down and curb on the deaths that are taking place within jails?
Sure. And one place we saw this happen was in Tulare County in the Central Valley. Small jail, small county. But they put in a person who actually had no prior experience in the jails. He was the new commander and he had only worked on the street before. And he came in and they had a death his first day. He started changing things up, right? He started changing the facility up and the paint job and everything, but also started changing up the patrols. So it was less predictable when someone was going to come and check on the inmates in their cells. Well, he said that in the last year, or I guess 10 months, he's prevented five people. Five people have been caught trying to, you know, kill themselves, self-harm, and they have stopped that. And according to our numbers, what we have, they haven't lost anybody since he started.
Hmm. You mentioned the Board of State and Community Corrections. That's the board that's supposed to offer some oversight over jails across the state. Are there going to be any changes or additions to how this board is run? I mean, it seems like it's, you know, its mission is kind of open-ended, at least having a dedicated mission to what their actual goal is for oversight and accountability.
Yes. Yeah, so another piece of legislation that passed last year would add two members to the board. One is going to have behavioral health experience. The other one, will be a medical, will probably be a doctor or nurse. So those are folks who are not necessarily tied to law enforcement. So when it comes to sort of watching the watchers, at least it's not, you know, sort of initially more law enforcement judging the actions of law enforcement. Mm.
Finally, Nigel, I mean, you began digging into this because you had an inkling that there was a problem. But when you finished this piece of your investigation, what was the big message that you took away as you reflect on it?
It's a good question. I think the message that I would take away is that oversight probably has to come with some teeth, that there probably have to be consequences for violations. And if you make a lot of recommendations, but there's no way to close it up, then it's unclear why anything would change. Hmm.
I think about the family members who lost someone within a jail. What recourse do they have after they find out that one of their loved ones has passed away?
Well, by and large, it's litigation, right? It's filing a lawsuit either in state or likely in federal court. There are attorneys in the state who a lot of what they do is filing lawsuits against jails, not just for deaths, but deaths are a big part of it.
Hmm. Nigel, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
That is CalMatters Justice reporter Nigel Dwara discussing his investigation into an increase in deaths within California's jails, despite the population dropping. Still ahead, a UC Davis professor's new memoir describes her journey from being a Bay Area dancer to a hip-hop scholar. We'll talk about dancing the Afro future, hula, hip-hop, and the Dunham legacy. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.